With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello and welcome to Trumpcast. I have never walked to that music. That's so exciting and sort of vaudeville. Welcome to Trumpcast, the show about the man who is from Mars, which is part of the moon. Wait, I think I reversed it. Is Mars part of the moon? The moon part of Mars? I just want to get Trump's astronomy right. All right, we have a great show tonight. It's a live show, but I need to apologize at the top. At Slate, we really are very committed to diversity and pluralism in what we do and everything we do. We try to do really diverse hiring. And we did try to find men who could talk about politics tonight. It's not easy. I mean, they didn't have the advantages we have. They didn't have the education. I'm not being essentialist. It's not like men can't talk about politics. They just don't train, you know? And so it's really difficult. So we don't have men tonight. We do have, and he's going to be front and center. Someday it'll be 50-50. We do have a token male in our improv group, which is great because he could really help with the prep, the sort of admin part of things, which men with their laser-like focus are so good at. So it's going to be all women tonight, and we really do promise to do better in the future about that. Also, what makes our show live tonight is that we have Trumpcast's very own improv troupe, the Trumpcast Colluders. This is Kate, Marla, and Ben, a man. He's got a beard. He's very manly. We'll try to push him out front. They have not prepped at all for this, and that is truly the magic of improv. I mean, I can't quite say like a magician that we've never met, but I can say they have no idea what we're going to talk about tonight, and basically they hear what goes on here and then somehow turn it into, I don't want to say comedy gold, comedy magic. They take magic and turn it into more magic, because that's how comedy works. And then we also have the brilliant and more serious voice of Vicky Ward. She's coming up now, the galaxy brain author behind Kushner, Inc., who somehow managed to get the Kushner story no one could. We had her on Trumpcast. I think it's one of the most downloaded episodes. Every page of that book is astonishing, from the background of the Kushners all the way to their experience in Europe. Of course, Charlie Kushner, you know, the time that he paid a prostitute to set up his brother-in-law. So that was kind of a cool detail. And then, of course, the Kushner's relationship with the Trumps. It's such a fantastic book, and we're so happy to have her here today, Vicky Ward. And then we also have the comedian par excellence, the only reason, in fact, my 13-year-old son is here, is the awesome Aparna Nancherla is joining us. Her Netflix special is kind of the best thing I've ever seen. She's very well known for her anxiety, so don't spook her. But support her in her journey, right?
Yes.
So I thought we would start by talking about the Kushners tonight, because there's nothing funny about them at all, and yeah, we definitely need to be very serious about them. Did they make you as anxious as they make me, especially in that ghosty picture in Buckingham Palace?
Oh yeah, this photo, I think this photo brings up a lot for a lot of people and for various reasons. It is definitely a Rorschach test, but it's a white splotch instead of a black. Yeah, I don't know. For me, as a young minority growing up in this country, like many people, I dreamed of growing up to be a straight white man, mainly for salary reasons. But I think this photo, for some reason, just reminds me of my parents being disappointed in me for not growing up to be that white person they so dreamed. But yeah, no, it also just feels like somehow looking into a house where it's like right after Obama's presidency, where it's like hope and change. Where are they? And there they are, just in the window, ghosts of their former selves. But yeah, I think on Twitter, I also saw some Flowers in the Attic references. And I would also say like maybe a still from Get Out too.
Definitely.
Yeah. Many things it brought up.
I think some old timers also said that it was one of those ghost stories that was like, no one's lived in that room for 50 years. Like, it's not clear whether we're all seeing the same thing. Like, there might be a sane person in the room who sees no one.
Right.
This one, you know?
Right, yeah. There, you should definitely buy this house. It has no ties to Russia. Definitely not.
Vicky, I mean, you actually know of, and you've met the Kushners.
Oh, yes. I've known both Jared and Ivanka for over 10 years. Jared wanted to hire me to edit the New York Observer. In fact, when he first moved to New York, I didn't know this, but I was part of a PR plan, a three-point PR plan that was a guy called Howard Rubenstein, who is kind of very elderly now, but back in the day, he was the PR guru to people like Rupert Murdoch and a lot of the real estate developers. When Jared's father went to jail, Howard Rubenstein came up with this plan to rehabilitate the family name, which involved the Kushners buying a trophy building in New York. It involved Jared buying a media outlet, which was the New York Observer, and Jared dating someone prominent. And we all know how it worked out. But as part of the reason for buying the New York Observer was partly to control the media, but the other part of it was so he could move with people that he thought were influential, that it just as a normal a real estate developer, he wouldn't ordinarily get to mix with. And I was working for Vanity Fair at the time, so I guess I counted. So I was, in fact, Howard Rubenstein's son, Stephen, introduced me to Jared all that time ago.
And that was toward kind of cleaning up their reputation.
Cleaning up their reputation.
I did hear sort of gossip from Matt Hiltzik, who's famous for doing PR for Harvey Weinstein. And I feel like, as with the
what a fun gig.
Exactly. But I feel like they like a challenge, like defense lawyers,
oh, yeah,
you know?
It's like the highest level of PR in, if it was a video game.
Yeah. Totally. They've leveled up, leaderboard.
Yep.
You have Harvey Weinstein, right? You need a lot of problems to cover up. But he said that he couldn't do what Charlie Kushner wanted, which was, I mean, the only thing anyone knows about Charlie Kushner is that he went to a prison camp in Alabama for setting up his... Wait, I always forget if it's his brother. I always forget, and I like hearing it again. So remind us of the details of that awesome chapter in Charlie Kushner's life.
Oh, wow. Well, there is a backstory. So basically, Charlie Kushner decided that on behalf of his three siblings, he was going to get the Kushner name into, Forbes and Fortune. He was going to make them as powerful and as prominent as the Kennedys. He said the Kushners are going to be the Jewish Kennedys. So what he did was he was very successful in real estate, used a lot of leverage, but he then took his siblings' money without telling them, and other partners' money without telling them, in order to buy influence, in order to pay all these politicians and Bibi Netanyahu. Then he paid him four times, $100,000 a pop for Bibi to come and speak to the local community. He also donated more than anyone else to the campaign of Jim McGreevy, who became the nut governor of New Jersey. His siblings, when they started to discover how their money was being used, filed a civil suit. The civil suit caught the attention of another ambitious New Jersey prosecutor, then the U.S. attorney, Chris Christie. And he started digging around in Charles Kushner's private life. And Charles Kushner's private life turned out to be not exactly the kind of private life that somebody who was the self-appointed head of a very Orthodox Jewish community would have really approved of. So Charlie Kushner was so furious with his siblings for airing what he saw his private business, his dirty laundry, that he hired a prostitute to sleep with his brother-in-law, but this was really to get at his sister, who was cooperating with the federal investigation. He hired a prostitute to sleep with his brother-in-law. He filmed the encounter, and then he sent the video to his sister on the day of his nephew's birthday. Oh. So after that, so he was very shortly after that arrested, and he pled guilty mainly, actually, everyone expected him to fight, and they actually thought he would beat the financial charges. But what he couldn't do was tell a jury what a good person he was after he'd done this extraordinary sting with a prostitute. But I think, and so he did plead guilty. The other thing that really drove that was the fact that Chris Christie made it very plain that if it went to trial, the prosecutors would air all the private stuff, all the stuff about Charlie Kushner's private life in public. So in the mind of Jared Kushner, who was brought in to sit in with all these meetings with Chris Christie's team, his view was that his father was really unfairly sent to jail, that this was a family dispute that should never have been aired in public, that Chris Christie was totally to blame, and he never saw this as a sort of consequence of breaking the law. And that's really important, I think, to bear in mind for what happens later on in the Trump administration. And it obviously turned out to be quite important for Chris Christie.
Right. It stopped him maybe from getting the chief of staff role vice president position.
Well, no, he was running the transition.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, given that, you know, Donald Trump never expected to win and was superstitious, you know, he'd been kind of left alone to run the transition. And he had done quite a lot of work. And every transition has a thing called the transition books, which, you know, are lists of all the possible people who should be viewed for all the administration positions. And Jared, it took him 24 hours to say, right, I want Christie gone, and I'm throwing out all his work. And that was really a disaster because, you know, as we now know, Trump thrives on chaos, but that transition was made many, many more times chaotic because of Jared Kushner's actions.
Mm-hmm. And Christie maybe could have kept them a little more in the bounds of the law.
Christie, whatever you think of his politics, is a very experienced politician.
Yeah,
and he would have been in Trump's case. You know, he was in the running for vice president. Jared made sure that didn't happen. And yeah, no, certainly he would have, you know, he wanted a position in the cabinet. And you know, Jared's put an end to that.
I like the, just hearing the whole story of the Kushner saga, I like that rich people's problems are so much more fun. Like, just imagine buying influence. Like, I feel like you can only buy influence after a certain income bracket. Like, yeah. I feel like currently the only people who influence I bought is like my gym, which won't let me cancel my membership. But like, nobody is like, oh, well, you give me a seat in your
administration. Have you ever tried to bribe someone? Because like a maitre d', like, how about this $1 bill? Would that sweeten the deal?
Could you perhaps carbonate my water? Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what that one, what will this do for you?
I think we need to try it more. I also get obsessed with how he sent the video on the nephew's birthday to the wife, to his sister.
To his sister.
Like, was it an MP3 or was it just attached file? And what was it called? Like, oh, 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 or like.
Now, you know, it's so interesting. So this is when you're fact checking, you know, we were like, how was it bulky? Because it was 2004, And we actually
really looked it up.
No, we really looked into this. It really was like one of those, you know, old video, like clunky, like must have like taken up, been hard to get in the mailbox. Like,
yes, was YouTube. It was just, yeah, this was before you could
before
just
any of it.
Upload it.
Yes.
Cleanly.
I think it's buffering.
Yeah,
it's
buffering. Right.
Yeah.
You're like, what is, oh no. And then it freezes. You're like, I think this is bad.
But do you, she must have been like, do I need to watch this now? It's his birthday. Okay, I'm going to take a look at this.
Yeah.
All right, what's going on? Because we now have had the Mueller report drop. We're going to talk more about it.
Yeah.
But it has to have had consequences for Kushner. He's acting like it's not on Axios and acting like, you know, towing the total exoneration line.
Well, yeah, so this
is... he's mentioned so many times in it.
So he's mentioned it's like 200, it's over 240 times. And I think that what's so interesting about those references are, one, that it doesn't make him look like a Boy Scout at all. I mean, I think my favorite bit in the Mueller report is when that it's during the transition, and it's actually, and Jared thinks that it'd be a great idea to have a private communication with the Russians out of the Russian embassy. And it's actually the Russian ambassador who points out to him that that's a really stupid idea. But I think, you know, my book is really about money and really about the Middle East. And what you can see in the Mueller report, you know, especially if you look at the footnotes, and Jared wouldn't answer this, but also from people, like there's a Lebanese businessman who's interviewed about his dealings. There are all these little breadcrumbs that I think indicate that Robert Mueller will have heard testimony that shows that all the sort of conflicts of interest, all the double dealing, all the self-dealing that's really been going on in this administration, particularly by the Trumps and by the Kushners. And that was not the purview of the Mueller report. But it's now the job of the Congress and of other branches of government, like the Southern District or the Eastern District of New York, to follow those. But I think, you know, when I read it, I certainly saw plenty of signposts that prosecutors could follow.
Yeah, the like little bits of breadcrumbs, if you know the names, and Deutsche Bank, and I don't think the Emirates get mentioned, but they're Qatar.
No, they do. And in fact, the Crown Prince of Abu Dhabi was mentioned so many times that he held an emergency summit. He was really appalled. And I think that is really telling. And that's, you know, all eyes on Abu Dhabi, on Saudi Arabia, and on their rivalry with Qatar, because Qatar is very rich. But I think that they were not at all pleased at how many times they got mentioned.
So the Mueller report, like, everyone read it except Americans.
Right.
Okay. And I mean, they read for and scanned for their name, like we all do.
Right.
And just like boring me. Right. What was actually said about the? I think I feel like I've read it closely and I've listened to the audiobook, and yet it eludes me where and what was said about those Kushner connections in the Middle East.
Well, what was really highlighted was all the frenetic networking that was going on in the transition that I think has not, you know, we're still now seeing the ramifications of that in what is called the so-called peace plan, which is really not a peace plan. It's, you know, Jared Kushner and his father trying to give Bibi Netanyahu, their very old family friend, the gift of a lifetime. But to do that, they are completely dependent on the Saudis and the Emiratis. And this was all stitched together. I mean, this is me now, you know, this is me sort of basing this on my reporting. it's not all in the Mueller report, but what the Mueller report really shows, if you know what you're looking for, is how the Crown Prince of Abu Dhabi, who is the mentor of Mohammed bin Salman, the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia, arrived very, very quickly in the transition and really put all this together. I mean, that's what has driven this strong alliance with Saudi Arabia that obviously is really problematic given the characteristic of the guy, of the Crown Prince, and what he's shown that he's capable of.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the fact that these people are now our best friends, I mean, is obviously hugely troubling, but there's a very simple reason for it: money.
I think yeah, more people would have read the Mueller report. I mean, there's lots of great things to say about Mueller, but is he the most scintillating writer? Maybe not.
Well, you're treading on dangerous territory.
I know, but I'm just saying there are, people might have ghostwritten it. They're very successful writers, perhaps at J.K. Rowling, or I forget who wrote 50 Shades of Grey, like for a dull title like that, it was pretty exciting.
But it was gripping. I thought it was...
Agree to disagree.
Well, no, I thought it was like John Grisham's The Firm. And then somebody, one of former senior White House official, who unfortunately I can't tell you who it is, but actually said to me afterwards, if the Democrats were really strategic, what they should do is hire actors and just have town halls around the country,
mm-hmm, yeah,
and read aloud the best bits, especially from the second part. And actually, it was a really terrific, ooh, idea.
Well, I will say that some of that has been done. There really is a graphic novel now. There's a cartoon. There's the federal prosecutors and Robert De Niro reading their take on Volume 2, which,
right,
is fantastic. They're on Volume 1, I think no one beats Adam Schiff's It's Not Okay,
right,
speech, which I plug on the show all the time. I collaborated with Audible to get the complete 19-hour audiobook done free from Amazon.
Ooh.
Yeah. Jeff Bezos socking it to the president after all the knockdowns. And some actors did that the first weekend. It's like beautifully read. I mean, they just had to read it in a marathon. It's a record. Someone read 100 pages in one sitting.
That's what the improv troupe is going to do.
Improv.
The full Mueller report.
Full Mueller report, exactly. Starting, mm-hmm, States. Yeah. Yeah. And there are a couple other forms of it, too. Anyway, and Justin Amash has a very good summary of it.
I would love a dance version or Hamilton half rap.
Yes, that's right. J.K. Rowling, yes, or rap. Wait, just because I'm obsessed with this. Oh yeah, a bunch of actors did a marathon reading of it in Queens last weekend. So your former senior White House official,
yes,
I can send him all the links. It is really important that we read it. Now let's admit, I didn't even remember that there's this part about the Abu Dhabi figure.
I did not either.
But wait, you have a good summary of it.
I do.
Yes, on Twitter, you just compressed it into.
Oh,
it looked like 140 characters.
I just wrote Mueller's statement was I would if I could, but I can't, so I didn't. But
right.
I really feel like he was Trump did not commit a crime. Like when he spoke,
right,
to us, he was basically just like wink, wink, yes, wink, compass,
right,
please.
Yes,
my eye, there's something in it.
It like was I just so. Feel I like, would if I could, but I can't, so I won't.
Yeah.
It was What I mean, we all somehow everyone thinks that's sophisticated and good, but were either of you, as some of Trumpcast guests, have been disappointed in that?
Yeah, I would not to bring Christie back up again, but I was like, if he was a lawyer, who's going to bring all the dirty laundry up. I'm like, we needed someone like him just to be like. And also, one time he didn't, order enough pizzas for the meeting. Like, I want all of the information. And then we get to decide. He was just so diplomatic about it that.
Although, don't you think it was a catalyst? There was a change that until that moment, a lot of Democrats bought into the Barr narrative, and that it was, mm-hmm, it did change the conversation. And mm-hmm, suddenly, now this idea that Lawrence Tribe, the Harvard professor, you know, the expert on the Constitution, is pushing that, you know, that there was a sea change. Suddenly a lot of the Democratic presidential candidates started banging the drum saying, you know, actually, we do need to have a public investigation. We do. I mean, I actually yeah. think that Robert Mueller did make a difference.
I keep saying I'm not going to say anything about Elizabeth Warren, and then I keep saying something about her. And what I'll say is she's a very good summary of the report. And, of course, it ends with her call to impeach. So no further questions. So the improv people have been quietly sitting over there, like evilly over-observing us. Now the Trump cast colluders are here to tell us what we really said.
Hey, Jeff.
Yeah.
I just want to say I had a really great time tonight, and yeah. I know it's the third date,
yeah.
And I just want to be really clear. Yeah. I don't want to never not have sex with you tonight.
Is it you're doing the Mueller thing?
The what?
It's called the Mueller thing, where it's really hard to completely understand. Do you want to come in?
Maybe yes, I don't never want to come in.
You see, so there's a straightforward way you could say this, uh-huh. and I felt like we really, like, over dinner, I felt like we really had a lot of common interests, and I felt like some real chemistry, and,
yeah.
and I completely understand consent, oh. but I'm yeah. not quite sure I'm understanding what you're saying.
Oh, see, this is what happens. So you put all your hopes on something eventually happening?
Yeah, 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 yeah exactly.
Yeah, you did. Like, you put yeah. all your faith in that, and you were like everything's going to be okay.
Time, yeah. yeah. And then yeah. you wait for that payoff, yep. and you think it's really going to come true. So.
And I'm telling you right now, yeah. I don't want to never not maybe have sex with you tonight.
Yeah, yeah, see, if you could just say something definitive, it would make me feel a lot better, because right now I feel like I'm being a bit of a creep, but I don't want to push it. I don't want to push it, but it's still so ambiguous. I feel like just say what your intention is,
yeah.
because I want to give you agency. So I no
yep.
pressure.
Yep.
Just say I want to go inside with you, or say uh-huh. also totally fine. I don't want to go inside with you. Just make it clear, please.
Yeah.
Please, for all of us.
I think what I'm gonna do, clear. I'm gonna leave the matter up to a group of your friends
no,
and a
I
group of
that.
My
I,
friends.
Please don't do that. Please.
We'll
don't do
that, and then they can deliberate over it. And
I'm gonna tell you about my group of friends. Like uh-huh. one, I really agree with. One never gets shit done. They just stonewall everything continually because they have their own sort of like conservative agenda.
Yeah, that's so. Just friendship in 2019. I'm sorry.
Yeah, right,
that's
right.
just the way it is.
Okay, I'm going to go inside.
Yeah.
And I'll leave the door open.
Uh-huh.
And then maybe you will come in.
I think I'm going to retire from dating.
What?
Yeah. Hey, Becky.
Yeah.
Can I talk to you about something?
Oh, my gosh. Of course, Joanne. Anytime.
Okay, great. I'm just going to... say this out loud.
Yeah.
And I'm going to see if you think it's weird or like totally normal and everybody's got this in their past. But you know, Mark?
Yeah.
Well, we've gone out a couple of times and he's kind of got like a sticking point in his like emotional growth.
Uh-huh.
And I kind of pressed him on it last night over drinks and I immediately regret it because I was just like, you know, we've all got stuff that
yeah.
we grew up with.
Like, oh my gosh, we all have our baggage.
Right?
Yes.
That's kind of where I was going, and I was thinking that he was going to be like, yeah, I'm not driven enough.
Sure.
But he offered up that when he was 7, his uncle sent his mom
uh-huh.
a videotape of his dad having sex with a prostitute that his uncle, his mom's brother, paid and then videotaped. And then that's like what his 7th birthday was about. And I was like, wow, wow, wow. I just thought this was going to be us being like, I like people who are too giving. It's a problem, you know?
Wow.
Is that weird? Do you think that's weird?
How rich are these people?
Oh my God, they're so rich. That's the thing. He
okay.
is loaded. And so I'm like, is this something I could look past? Is this like a thing that like, I don't know, maybe 10, 15 years down the line, he'll be hiring somebody to catch me in a sex sting? And like, is that exciting? Is that terrifying? I don't know.
You also have to be upfront and be like, in your dating profile, did you put never watched a videotape of my family having sex with prostitutes.
You know what? I did not.
Yeah, you got to be upfront about your deal breakers.
Well, that's not one of the columns on eHarmony. Yeah. eHarmony is like, what book?
Okay, so you are here because you are interested in growing up to be a white, privileged person. P-R-I-V-I-L-E-G-E. Congratulations on making it this far.
Thank you.
You're in the graduate program, of course. So just a quick reminder, what are some things that privileged white people like?
Bland food.
That's right, bland food. Avoiding spice, yes.
Talking first and the most.
Talking first and the most, specifically which gender?
I would have to say men?
Yes, that's the majority of this course will be about cis. Ooh. Pet, white male privilege culture.
Okay.
Yes.
Failing up.
Failing up. Very, very good. Of course, there's very little that a white male can do without succeeding in their lives. A lot of second chances, third chances, fourth chances. But let's start with the basics.
Okay.
Let's start with yachts.
Oh.
Y-A-C-H-T-S. And corruption. Now a lot, yes, over here.
I feel like I should be taking notes, but if I truly want to become a cis privileged white male, I'm like, fuck it, I don't have to take notes. The notes will come to me. Is that right?
Or you would be surprised at how effective that is.
Okay.
Actually,
yes.
Yes, in fact, don't ever write anything down. Shrug your way through some stuff. Mm-hmm. If you want, some advanced tips are you can pick up lacrosse.
Ooh. Okay.
Okay, you can pick up lacrosse.
This?
Yeah, that's it's like it's hockey up in the air.
Okay.
Like imagine hockey down here and then you just pick it up.
It just makes no sense.
Right. Makes no sense.
Right.
So and then you can take a multisyllabic name. What's your name?
Jennifer.
Hey Jennifer. That's perfect. Trisyllabic names are great, but put like a Landon in there, like a Huntington or something, and make it a first name.
Okay.
What's yours?
Maria.
Maria. A little too immigranty, to be honest. Maria.
I feel it.
And not like the safe kind of immigrant.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm just curious. Can you tell us how you ended up in this job?
Me? I was literally walking through the school, and they were like, we need someone to teach some classes. And I was like, hey, I'm a white dude. And then here I am.
And scene.
Okay, so awesome.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
I can't get the topic of anxiety off my mind because really one of the number one questions people have at TrumpCast, in fact, guests have it before the mic comes on, is just the usual. How are you handling all this? When Trump was first inaugurated or maybe elected, I went to the doctor feeling exhausted and she said, not any trace of joking on her face, oh, you have Trump flu. Really? And I was just like, Trump flu? And she said, like, yeah, a lot of people have Trump flu. It's affecting many Americans, I think the majority, and that the treatment was acupuncture. I'm not kidding.
What?
Yes. I know. And Trump flu, and I just kept being like, Trump flu, that's the joke, right? And she was like, Trump flu, like avian flu, Trump flu.
Wow.
But you...
I like that the solution is kind of like a privileged form of self-care.
You're right. It's something,
thin needles.
It's something Ivanka would do. Like
yes.
It's something, right.
Yeah.
So Trump flu. Like you said, you called our times, Aparna, the anxiety Olympics.
I do feel like after the 2016 election, for a while, it did feel like for anyone who deals with mental health or had depression, anxiety before, it did feel like mental health kind of got gentrified in that all these other people started coming in the neighborhood and it's like, we were here the whole time, you know? It's like, don't come to me with your sad, like my sad predates this.
Like we were like during Obama.
Yes.
It doesn't have anything,
It's like, okay, maybe if you bring lattes, you're fine, but... Yeah.
But has that actually made it somewhat easier in a weird way now that you have?
I don't know if it would say easier. I definitely have to make stronger boundaries around the news and my intake of it, because I do feel like social media can exacerbate a lot of symptoms around, I think, just mental wellness in general.
Yeah.
Because I think just all the dogpiling on Twitter and like public shaming and just like the speed at which information travels, I think sometimes it isn't the speed at which the human brain is capable of processing it in a healthy way. Yeah.
Yep. Vicky, what about you? I mean, we've never talked about this.
No. I mean, I think that the danger, you know, of actually reacting to Trump is that, you know, that's what he wants us to do. I mean, it's every day I sort of, before I kind of tweet anything, I think, do I really want to engage? Because on one level, it brings me down to him. And I was quite in, this may sound a strange thing to say, I was quite glad in a way that I was reporting on Jared Kushner and Ivanka Trump, because I sort of thought they'd been left out wrongly from a very important narrative.
They're
about,
sort of a marginalized community in the
story. Well, they, you know, they,
what about
for
Tiffany?
For a while. Well,
Tiffany.
Well, she was in England this week. But I do, you know, I sort of, it's really hard to know what to do with Trump. I mean, I can see why you feel sick, because there's a feeling of powerlessness, because either you engage and you sort of have to play on his terms, or you don't engage and then you're not using your voice. It's impossible.
It's a hard one.
Yeah, I think, I mean, for he's horrible on so many levels, but I will say one thing he is adept at is knowing how to nail a personal brand on Twitter, and that is just a one-dimensional monolith with no room for nuance. Like, you know what you're going to get when you go to him, and it's just, you know, violent nonsense.
Yeah,
but he's in charge. That's what's it. Because how do you take charge of the narrative? And I haven't yet seen anyone that's really able to do it. I mean, actually, I thought Nancy Pelosi was very, very good. And she was like, I think that needs an intervention.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, poor man.
Yeah.
That was, I think he probably, the reason he's now sort of so hysterical about her is because he doesn't know how to deal with that.
Yes.
But she now seems in her own exhausted. We don't know what's going on with her. We want to wake her up and get her back to the way she was around the shutdown. Whoops. So I've been thinking and had a column today about cheating. Trump is a cheater. And that led me to look into casino cheating, like other kinds of cheating, like cheating at pickup basketball. Did you know,
golf.
Like, golf cheating? Golf, exactly. A great book about the commander in cheat, about his golf. They call him Pele. The caddies call him Pele because he so often, exclusively, kicks the ball from the rough to the fairway. Like, just, they know he does. Other times he, like, claims a ball is his that isn't. Like, he hit his into the water, and he's like, I'll just take this 12-year-old kid's ball and claim it's mine. But anyway, there is a form of cheating that he might have known from casino cheating called collusion. It's like when you and the dealer are in cahoots. I know some of you have probably tried this in Vegas. So there's collusion. But also, I was trying to figure out if we think that cheaters need to know they're cheating. So, like, let's say just a dealer is feeding, so you can bet on them. Like, let's say the White Sox World Series, the World Series in 1919, the team that won is the Reds, because it was thrown to them, right, by the White Sox. So, like, are they cheating? Right? Maybe not. Okay, but what about if Lance Armstrong or some of the juicing baseball players thought they were getting B12, but they were getting anabolics? And then what about the kids in the admission scandal who say they didn't know, right? But they still don't deserve to be at Harvard or whatever, right? We strip that away. So anyway, do you think Trump, if Trump cheated to win, do you think he cheated to win? And, and the other thing, wait, one last thing about that, I'm obsessed, is you are busted for juicing whether or not it helps you win or not.
Right.
So, like, Lance Armstrong might have won, he was great. He might have won some Tours de France without his drugs, but say he had those titles stripped because we don't know whether he won with it or not. So the idea that the Russian interference had to influence the outcome and he had to know about it and actively, you know, do more than welcome the interference, I think he can confidently still be called a cheater, if not quite a conspirator. I don't know. What do you guys think?
I think he's a bad cheater. Okay. I mean, I think he would have liked to have colluded with Russia properly.
Yeah.
And that the reason the first volume of the Mueller report is sort of unsatisfying is because it's basically they couldn't quite pull it off. I think all the stuff, I mean, it's quite clear, it seems to me, that what Trump really wanted was business in Russia. You know, and Ivanka Trump, my special subject, you know, was definitely involved in talks about building a Trump Tower in Moscow. Mm-hmm. Trump thought he would use the election. I don't think he actually thought he would win. I think he thought he would, you know, it was a con. In his mind, the con was that he was going to get really rich by running. Now he's won, he's going to get even richer. Mm-hmm. But I think the actual, what happened with, you know, I think that the efforts to collude with Russia, sort of in a way, if you're in Trump's head, it shows that he failed
right.
to cheat as well as he would have liked.
Yeah, yeah. But he still won. He still won.
Yeah, but I don't think that was the intention.
Oh, I see. Oh, because he didn't get the business and he got stuck with this boring job.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he's too addicted to attention to be a great con man, because you have to kind of be a little willing to be under the radar sometimes when you're trying to pull a long game. And I think he just can't have people not paying attention to everything he's doing enough to be able to, like, pull off something well without being like, look what I did.
Yeah. But I think that's what I'm reading Michael Wolff's second book. It's the sequel to Fire and Fury, called Siege. And one thing that he discovered is that everyone around Trump, you're reading it too, right? Everyone around Trump just wants to talk about him so much.
Yeah.
Like us. Like anytime they get alone, they just want to, like, give their character analysis of him. But one thing he sort of divined from all this is that he really does tell the opposite of the truth almost every single time, just like exact inversion, like it's geometry to him. Like if it can, you know, if it's definitely true that the Central Park Five didn't do it, they definitely did do it. Like if the evidence exonerates them, then...
Well, look at England this week. He's like on tape calling Meghan Markle nasty. Mm-hmm. No, I didn't say that. It's on tape.
Yeah.
But it just doesn't, you know, it's water off a duck's back.
Right. And then the thing is, he does it, according to Michael Wolff, he does it so brazenly and openly and sticks to his lie like a barnacle that he'll never, ever say that, you know, he was wrong about birtherism, about Central Park Five. And like he'll just be presented with DNA evidence. He'll be presented with, you know, whatever it is, and he'll never take anything back. And the cheating happening in plain sight. I mean, while you're taking your ball, I don't play golf, but out of the rough, whatever that is, of weeds or something, you then just carefully kicking it back. What are you telling yourself?
He feels like the inverse of the way a lot of successful women have imposter syndrome, where they think they don't belong.
Yeah.
He feels like, what if imposter syndrome was a human, and it was an actual imposter running around, and inside it just had no doubt.
Oh, yeah, right. Like so a reverse.
Reverse of what the rest of us feel, where we're like,
he's an imposter, but he's sure that he's totally.
Yeah, he has, like, confidence syndrome.
Right. Yeah. We're like those of us with imposter syndrome. Everyone says to a friend, I feel like I'm an imposter. And they're like, no, you're not. But he says, like, I feel like I'm great. And the friends want to be like, no, you're an imposter.
Yeah.
Well, I think, do you know, there's a famous story about Trump that you're now reminding me of. When he was going through, his company was going through bankruptcy, and he walked outside Trump Tower, and he saw someone, begging in the street, and he had, I think, $10 or something in his tray, and Trump said to someone, you know what the difference between that guy and me is? He has $10. And if you think about that mentality, I mean, most of us, if we were faced with bankruptcy, you know, it would be terrifying. His mentality is, you know, how do I con my way out? And the extraordinary thing is, it's worked.
I hate ending on that, but we're going to bring back the Trump cast colluders. I should have said it's Kate, Marla, and man, Ben.
That sounds too close to man bun.
Hi, is the pharmacy still open?
Yes.
Oh, hi. Yeah, hi. I wanted to get a flu vaccine for Trump flu.
I'm sorry, for what?
For Trump flu.
It sounded like you said Trump flu.
Yeah, for Trump flu. I want to get a flu vaccine.
Well, we have every year, right, uh-huh. The CDC puts out the vaccine.
Yes.
And it's based on the strains of the flu that they think are going to be prevalent.
This is super prevalent.
Yeah, I know.
I'm immobile. I can't go to... It's interfering with my life.
I get it.
Yeah.
I hear you. But the problem is...
Take my temperature.
We have to go back to 2016. Nobody thought that this was a strong strain, right? Nobody thought that this was going to be something that we needed to... So we've got, you know, the two strains
I'm sorry to interrupt. I'm battling really bad W diarrhea, and there's nothing in your aisles back
there. Oh, yeah. We have a few pills, like, wow.
Oh, back here, George W diarrhea?
Yeah, W diarrhea. I haven't heard that one in a while. I know. Here, I'm going to give you the two packets we have left. They're free.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I'm positive.
That's amazing. I mean, I had like Obama elation for 8 years.
I know.
And this stuff was the best.
Disappeared. Yeah, it was great, right? But then the W diarrhea came right back.
I know. Well, the problem is you have to take one right at the onset, and then you have to take another one an hour later and another one after your next
episode?
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, sure.
Trump flu?
Yeah.
Good luck.
Yeah. Can I sell you something else? Like,
No, maybe I'll just try some natural remedies, you know, like just being in a coma. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, just not reading or looking at anything.
Yeah, that is exactly what I prescribe. When people come here all the time and I'm like, I'm so sorry I can't help you. Your best bet is just to put on blinders, go about your life. You might want to come back in 2 years after 2020. Uh-huh. By then, ironically, we'll probably have the Trump flu vaccine, right? But hopefully we'll be on to something else. God willing, we are. But if not, we'll have that vaccine ready for you.
Okay? Maybe like a Warren balm.
Sure.
Will be really soothing.
Sure. Yeah. Hey, babe.
Yeah.
I have to say something. And before you like react or say anything, I just want to get it all out. Okay?
Yeah, of course. Of course.
Oh, okay. You know the big accounting seminar thing I went to in Buffalo last week? Well, as you know, this industry is predominantly male, and I absolutely went to that conference planning to sleep with somebody else, okay? Whew. I approached several men, I would say somewhere in the neighborhood between 5 to 8, all of them for various reasons turned me down. Some of them... We're in happy relationships. Some of them just weren't physically attracted to me. One guy was 17, and I was like, whoa. And I just, oh, God, I feel so much better. I'm like, I tried. It didn't work. So I'm really like, I'm here. I'm in this.
Still not okay.
Okay,
you know that, right? I know you didn't cheat. Is that what you're saying?
I didn't cheat. Sure. Nothing happened.
You kind of. Kind of did she.
But you said, did I?
I mean,
did
I? You intended to cheat.
Yeah, but was I just expressing myself with the result that might have been cheating?
I mean, Elise, you left, look at this. You left with 4 different suitcases, and I asked, are those all different outfits that you brought?
Yeah, I mean, the conference is I've got to look my best several times a day, and... You know, I'm just saying, you can go through. There's no hotel room keys. You can check my phone.
No, it's not.
Check my phone, babe. There's no numbers in there.
No. You're misunderstanding, because you intended to cheat. That's just as bad as cheat. Maybe not as
is
bad.
It, see?
I mean, it's not. Okay, fine. It's not
right,
as bad.
Right, because would you feel worse if I was like, I banged a bunch of dudes? Would you? Be honest.
I would. You're right.
Be honest.
If there was, yes, if there's a spectrum, I would feel bad.
Right?
I mean, on the spectrum, be like, did you bang a bunch of dudes at the same time? Did you bang them all individually?
Yes, that's all nuance.
Kind of okay with the 17-year-old, except for him being underage.
Exactly, right? But he's got a mother somewhere.
Sure.
So I just live in that moment
of
I'm horrified that you screwed around with a bunch of people at the conference, and now come back.
I can't. But once you're over that line, I can't. I don't know that I can do that.
God. Okay. Okay.
Do you remember when you got so mad at me because I looked at pornography and you found that?
Yeah, that's disgusting.
What?
That's crazy.
All right. Steven, I looked at your numbers and...
Yeah.
Sadly, I do think it's bankruptcy that you're going to have to pursue in order to get out of this.
Okay.
So, congratulations!
Thank you so much. Can you believe it?
Hey.
Finally!
Woo-hoo. Whoa. I brought in your mom. She's so proud.
Get out of here.
Honey.
Oh my gosh.
And it's a little cake.
I have worked.
You got nothing.
I have worked so long and so hard for this. Thank you, Mom.
Oh my gosh.
Thank you.
Only winners can achieve this, right? If you didn't have a lot, you can't have nothing.
That's right. Right, it's a real Icarus thing, right? I really flew so close to this star and then I really fell so far.
This cake is frosting. There's nothing inside.
Oh my gosh! It's a bankruptcy cake. Well, I guess I'll cut into it, but there's nothing to cut into, right? It's just the frosting.
Just empty calories.
Oh, wow. Oh. So I guess I'll be moving back in.
Yay! I can't wait to tell the ladies at Mahjong that 2 of my sons have moved back into the basement.
I was always comparing myself to my brother Chad, and then he went bankrupt right out of college.
Right.
And I was like, will I ever get there? Is it ever meant for me? And then I finally did in my mid-40s.
I made it.
I know.
It took your dad till 62.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I totally forgot. Just like the old man, always trying to aim for that bankruptcy.
Aw. Do you have any advice for him as he goes on his way? I'm his mom, so he doesn't want to listen to me, but I'm just
You know, just relish in your failure.
Oh.
Be oblivious to others' pain and really enjoy that.
Oh, I'm taking that white privilege class at the community center, so I feel like...
Oh, good for you! See?
Hi, I'm Josh Levine. My podcast, The Queen, tells the story of Linda Taylor. She was a con artist, a kidnapper, and maybe even a murderer. She was also given the title The Welfare Queen, and her story was used by Ronald Reagan to justify slashing aid to the poor. Now, it's time to hear her real story. Over the course of 4 episodes, you'll find out what was done to Linda Taylor, what she did to others, and what was done in her name.
The great lesson of this for me is that people will come to their own conclusions based on what their prejudices are.
Subscribe to The Queen on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening right now.
Trumpcast watched as closely as anyone the Mueller report, the Mueller investigation unfold. And those of you who have been listening from the beginning know that this show started when Jacob Weisberg just thought it would be whimsical to make a show about one of the weirder and less likely candidates for the Republican nomination. And then as a sort of job creation initiative of Trump, he kept winning. And so we kept having jobs. I mean, I don't want to be grateful to anything, but it was interesting on election night when we had a live event to celebrate the end of our jobs because we knew Hillary would win. And then the bride was shot in the face, basically. Oh. I know. So it's a bad night. But anyway, so we're still here. So we watched that investigation, the appointment of Mueller, firing Comey, appointment of Mueller, and then of course waited to see what would happen. And there's something slow motion about this time right now. Like, we touched on this a little bit, but what for you, what did you expect from the report, and where do you feel the same suspended animation that I feel right now of what's next?
Yes, because I think the real story of this administration is not in full sight, and it is about all this dealing in the Middle East. And so that is why I'm so supportive of what Professor Lawrence Tribe has written about in the Washington Post yesterday and talked about today on television. I happen to be on the segment after him, so I paid close attention. But, you know, this idea that the House should have a sort of proper prosecutorial investigation so that all these and witnesses like Hope Hicks, Don McGahn, they should all be called so that we can really understand. Rex Tillerson from the State Department would have an awful lot to say, as would James Mattis, the Defense Secretary. You know, I mean, I end my book at a moment when Jared Kushner's company is hit the trophy building on which they had a massive amount of debt, and the clock was ticking. It needed to be paid by February of 2019, that quite miraculously, a Canadian company whose largest outside shareholder was the Qatari government bailed them out in a deal that made no sense. It was a 99-year lease which was paid up front. And at the same time, the US withdrew its support of the blockade of this country, of Qatar, where, by the way, there is an American base. You know, I mean, this is real diplomacy for dollars. And we haven't begun to understand. We see, like, the state visit to England, where every single member of the Trump family, including Tiffany, was rolled out, there was a mockery in the Met, in the media. You know, this was, but it was the tip of the iceberg. This is all about branding. It's all about money. And I think that what I feel is, when are we going to get to the bottom of this? Because it can't be quick enough. And we're not, you're right, it is too slow. We're not going quick enough. I feel like we're stuck.
Yeah. Do you worry about the consequences for national security of these unholy bargains? I mean, where do you think that might follow? Like, really?
Well, this was
implications
the most...
for our safety and our everyday life. Like, when is the water not going to stop running? I mean, we've already lost Jamal Khashoggi, and we have internment camps at the border with children in them.
Right.
But from the point of view of the Middle East.
Right. Well, so this was the great fear of Rex Tillerson and James Mattis, right? You know, James Mattis is an extraordinarily qualified general. Rex Tillerson was qualified to be Secretary of State because of what he'd done at ExxonMobil. And Jared Kushner kept pushing them out of his communications with Mohammed bin Salman, Mohammed bin Zayed, and the sort of tipping point when they really, really were frightened was precisely when, right after the U.S. the presidential visit to Riyadh, to Saudi Arabia, where the theme of that summit was all about cooperation in the Gulf, there was clearly a secret deal going on. Sort of about 10 days later, the Saudis and the Emiratis launched a blockade of Qatar, where there is an enormous American airbase. That's our security. Rex Tillerson and James Mattis were in Australia. They were absolutely horrified because they knew that the Saudis would never have done this without a green light from the White House. And it was very clear to them that the person who gave the green light was Jared Kushner, because he had monopolized this relationship and he'd cut everyone out of his communications. And when they, you know, they went to the regent immediately to try and defuse the situation. But the end of the story, basically, is that Jared succeeds in pushing both of them out. And Mohammed bin Salman, meanwhile, after an all-night session with Jared Kushner, starts his rendition program, where he imprisons any Saudis who could challenge him in the Ritz-Carlton in Riyadh. And it ends with, it doesn't end, but as part of that same repressive rendition program, there is the murder of Jamal Khashoggi. And what you've seen is that the people around Donald Trump, who are actually qualified in matters of national security, are shrinking. And it is basically now Jared's show. And the security experts that I speak to think that this deal, what he's trying to do with Bibi Netanyahu, is going to be, he may not pull it off because of uncertainty in Israel with those elections and other, you know, the timing may be unfortunate for them. But were he to pull it off, it would be extraordinarily dangerous because you would have the Palestinians completely alienated against not just Israel, but against America. And in the long term, that could be extremely, extremely dangerous.
I know the answer is everything, but what are you scared of in particular?
What am I scared of? What a loaded question. I am obviously less well-versed in the foreign policy intricacies of the current administration, but I will say that as more of a layman viewing the Russia investigation, to me it almost did feel like similar to the season finale of Game of Thrones,
yeah,
or series finale, where it's like we were all watching it and we're expecting this huge payoff and then it just came and went. And I think there was even like a petition to do it over. And it kind of just feels like that was it. Like that was what, yeah, we were all geared up for. Sunday nights. So I don't know, like, what am I scared of? I think it's like we were talking about before, where it's almost like a burnout of anxiety where you're like, I hit my fear peak,
yes,
this week. I think I'm just going to marinate in paralyzed dread for a while.
Did either of you like to substitute on Sunday night Chernobyl? Chernobyl? It's just relaxing. You
That's
just need
the feel
something
good
to
alternative.
It's a feel good thing. Mm-hmm. You just 86, wow, just like things feel good. The Soviet Union's just, it's my escapism. But there's this really, like you saying, we reached our limit. There's this, it's a story of disinformation, like our times too. And has anyone seen it here? Yeah, it's so good, right? So the nuclear reactor core has just melted down, and they're measuring to see how much Rntgens of radiation are in the air. And they're told that there's 3.6, which is a horrible level, but not out of this world level. And then they discover that their dosimeters... See, I learned a lot. don't go beyond 3.6. It's the highest it has ever gone. So wow, they later find, when they get like a actually good, sensitive, high, whatever piece of equipment, that it goes, that it's thousands or whatever.
Right.
And I sometimes feel like Nancy Pelosi, for example, is just looking at the 3.6. Like, it's as high as we go, but we don't have a measure for this much,
right,
much political,
right,
radiation.
Yeah.
Just to keep pushing the metaphor. but that's how it seems. It just seems like our instruments just don't go this high.
Yeah.
I mean, what Vicky just described is catastrophic. And then that's when you forget about Puerto Rico. Forget about Puerto Rico. You forget about abortion. You forget about the kids at the border. And then we're off the dosimeter.
Yeah.
You know?
I think it is, like you're saying, a question of vantage point, too. It's like we haven't been in this position before, so we're seeing everything kind of like, okay, is this happening? Because we,
yeah,
don't have anything to compare it to, at least not in my lifetime. Yeah.
Yeah, it seems bad. I mean, although I do recommend Chernobyl, not in your lifetime, but that was bad. That was really bad.
Yeah.
Their skin gets translucent and then their veins collapse. Ooh,
oh.
It happens really fast.
Wow.
on. Okay. I think I said something about Trump, how Trump cheated to win, on Twitter, and someone said, "I still blame the American people," you know, because we were stupid enough to believe Hillary was sick or Pizzagate or Chupacabra or whatever the Russian disinformation was. But I don't blame the people because, and this is where my thought process was, I'm thinking of immunity, like immunity to radiate, like physical immunity. And we just don't have immunity to disinformation of the kind we're getting now.
Right.
I mean, this is my question. Have you all admitted, ever believed a piece of disinformation? I have, and I'll tell you what it is at the end. But like just some thing that got in your head. Even Molly McHugh, the information expert, was telling me she believed this thing about Poland that was like really elaborate. She like spent the day talking about it with people. I'll tell you mine. Someone on Facebook said, I think Antifa, right around the time of the Charlottesville, August 10th, the Charlottesville Reunite the Right rally, that Antifa was as bad as the neo-Nazis. And they had evidence that they were like really violent and, you know, and it was basically a very, very terrible people on both sides kind of thing.
Right.
And it was a smart person. It's actually someone whose name you'd recognize, like a writer for a news daily broadsheet newspaper in New York. And I didn't really check the videos. And I suddenly was like, oh, that's a good point. I shouldn't really just get all behind Antifa. Like maybe they're bad too. And it really took me a while to like spiral, go back from that. You know, yeah. Or like Hillary's pneumonia is going to kill her or whatever.
Right.
I don't think we have the immunity. See, you guys have good immune systems.
No, I don't. I've fallen for misinformation all the time. And I've definitely retweeted things without reading the full article.
Come on.
My first paragraph, that's got to be the gist.
headline.
Yeah. But I think I spread something once where it was like a Dove campaign that was racist, but then they had just taken it out of context. They had just like taken one picture from the ad without all the information, and then just that by itself made it seemingly look racist, but it wasn't.
So
I think it's you're right. We aren't equipped with all the things to ask to be like, is this real?
And we're moving super fast, too fast. Also, I think I've cited this on the show, but the MIT study soon after the hacks on the election, particularly the hacks on social media, showed that we're more apt to share things that are hyper-arousing, especially disgusting, than we are, and also untrue. We just are drawn to lies, you know, to fiction.
Right.
So I think there was an example that, and more than confirmation bias, we're driven by like whatever kind of like gets us high. So the example was a news item about Trump having taken a sick kid, given him a free ride on his airplane to the hospital. He did do that. And nobody shared it. The Trumpites didn't share it because it's just boring.
Right.
Yeah. Right. So it wasn't just like, even though it made him look like the one thing in the world that's ever kind of made him look like a good guy.
It doesn't fit with the brand.
Yeah. It doesn't fit with the brand. Like the thing has to be. So I don't know. I think there's a level of like biological, like it's our biology. Like we get addicted to it. I don't know. I'm sort of like thinking that maybe it's like we thought that we'd be hit with germ warfare, you know, that like it's some virus or anthrax we'd all be hit with. But instead we were hit with this attack on our hearts and minds that came through information, you know?
Yeah, and we think it's good because we're like, I also saw, you know, a puppy rolling into leaves. So
yes, exactly.
It can't be bad. Yeah.
If that's over there, right, exactly. Yeah. And my aunt has an Etsy store that she's putting over here and
I think, now that I'm thinking about it, you know, I spend, for obvious reasons, a huge amount of my time talking to people in Trump world, in the whether they're in the White House or elsewhere on Capitol Hill, and it is true to your point. You know, the phone goes like 10 times a day, and they are as prurient and as obsessed with the president's failings.
Oh yeah,
you know they want to enable the Democrat media. I mean, they have as much, you know, I mean, I hate to use the word fun, they're enjoying themselves.
You mean savoring the sort of downfall?
No, they are enjoying being part of the story that people like me and you then tell.
I see, right.
You know, so I mean, what I really found interesting when I was reporting the book on Jared and Ivanka was that how united both sides of the political aisle were about them. It wasn't that surprised that a lot of Democrats, by the time I got to the story, had real problems with their ethics. But the amount of piling on from people who you would think would be their biggest fans was really interesting.
I just realized, partly because I want them to have to tear up their whole improv thing, to whatever's next, to talk about a whole new subject. But I really, really want to just ask you and pretend we're just sitting together gossiping. What is Ivanka Trump like? I don't know why I've never asked you.
I think that she is fake.
Yeah.
Just completely.
Crowd was. What a visceral reaction.
But would we be like
the
nervous
thing a woman
knows,
has ever
no,
been
No, but
called.
Actually, you know something? I use that word. She is fake in every way. She's fake physically, and she's fake. She was very successful when she was in New York presenting herself as an independent, you know, working mother. She had a very effective branding machine that really worked, and it worked in part because, like her husband, she was so much more polished and articulate and more balanced, so it seemed, than her father. What's happened when she's got to Washington is that all those pretensions have been stripped away for what they are, which is pretensions. And actually, she's emerged as someone who is absurdly dependent on her father for her identity, her status, her power. She's really like a little girl. And when you really look at what she's done in terms of policy, it's very little. And what she has done is really sort of hypocritical. I mean, she was involved in a lobbying for the expansion of the childcare tax credit. Meanwhile, her own fashion brand, which she did not let go of for 18 months, which was really appalling. She put herself in all these rooms with foreign leaders whose countries then gave her brand trademarks. I mean, just appalling kind of appearance of conflicts of interest and corruption. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there she is lobbying the expansion of childcare tax credit, while her own brand has the most appalling child labor practices. So she's, nothing about her is real. Mm-hmm. And I think that's my really big takeaway. In a funny way, that, you know, personally, I prefer the brothers, Eric and Don.
Do you?
Well, because for one reason, I think they are what they seem.
Right, okay, yeah. Yeah, they're pretty great.
Saying they have weird faces. Yeah. That's fair.
Okay, but I've wondered if sometime one of the Trumps came on the show, and of course I just want to think that I would be like, to either any of them. But I have this weird horror that, like, what if she made, like, a guest appearance right here with us? Would we just, like, all suck up to her still? Like, initially, we'd be like, we're all in it together. We hate her. She's fake. She's awful. She's responsible for child labor horror. But then we would just be like New York about it and say, Ivanka, it's so great to see you. You're back from England. Would we or not? Well, like, are you able, when you sit with Jared or Ivanka, are you able, well, now they probably won't talk to you.
No.
But
I'm not sorry.
But
yeah.
Back when you were, like, evilly, like, planning to write your book, would you have to flatter them?
No. Well, no. In fact, I had an off-the-record meeting with Jared in the summer of the campaign, and a publicist sat in with it, and I was actually trying to persuade him to go on the record. This was for an article for Esquire magazine, which really was I didn't know it would be the precursor to the book, but it was. And, I can't share what he said because it was off the record, but I will say that I left
that... Well, this is a private room.
No, but I left that meeting literally feeling like I needed to have a bath. So no, I mean, I did not suck up to him, but it was very clear. He made it very clear in that meeting how he viewed journalists, and it was very, you know, I left that, for a guy who'd owned a newspaper, he clearly did not understand or had any interest in understanding the point of public service.
If you met Ivanka, she comes up to you after a show, backstage. She's like a Secret Service with her, and she says, like, I'm a huge fan.
What?
What do you say?
I mean, I would say thank you because it's polite. But,
right.
But I would be like, no, you're not.
Would you have some thugs take her away that, like, hang out back with you?
My Secret Service?
Yes. Yes.
I don't know if I'd be like, take her away, but I would be like, I don't really have anything to say to her.
Yeah.
That would be nice.
I still think that on election day in New York, the best confrontation with Donald Trump is when he was like signing his ballot.
Yeah.
Or checking his ballot. Some guy leaned over and just said, New York hates you, Donald Trump. And then on the Women's March, they had France hates you, Donald Trump. And I think if we see him, that you should just say America hates you, Donald Trump. But anyway, everyone always tries to think of what they'd say. Like, oh, tell him. But yeah, anyway, that's all I tell
but
him.
But I think your question, I mean, I hear it all the time. What will New York do to Jared and Ivanka? Because this is, you know, to use Steve Bannon-esque terminology, this is their base.
Mm.
And it is a sort of parlor get, you know, question, you know, what will they just come back and do they have so much money that, that, you know, New York is a town all about money, they'll be forgiven and absorbed. I mean, I don't know. For obvious reasons, I hope not, but...
Can we agree that we're not going to, like, serve them in restaurants? And just, like,
every time I've seen the Trump, like, brigade in the city, like, one time I was on near, you know, wherever their building is, and it was like New Yorkers just made a collective opinion to just make a parade of middle fingers. Like, everyone who was near just politely stood almost like if you were saluting, but the opposite.
Right.
They were just like, this is what we do now.
It's just our pact. Yeah, it's just our pact. All right, we have one more brilliant appearance from the Trump cast colluders.
Hey, guys, we just got the numbers back, and our brand is tanking, okay? This shampoo is supposed to be on the shelf of every single person with hair in the continental United States, and it just isn't. So what I would like to do is have a quick brainstorming session about how we can appear more inflammatory, racist, bi, like just anything to get people to retweet us in a mistaken way and go, oh my God, I had no idea finesse felt this way, right?
Okay,
we want people like repulsed. This is what it takes. This is what it takes.
This is that sort of there's no such thing as bad attention.
That's right. That's right. No such thing as a bad idea.
And you want us to really say terrible things right here in this room?
Well, like, I feel like, why not? You know?
Okay.
The opportunity has befallen us.
First ingredient.
Yeah.
Baby tears.
Ooh, I like it. I'm writing it down. Yeah.
That we collect through abuse.
Okay.
Not just natural, regular crying.
Right. We can't have organic crying. It has to be something like they were left alone in a car. Put like a car with the windows up or something.
Yeah. It's a cute baby. We're like, oh, this baby is so cute. Oh, it's left in the car.
We should put very large letters like tested on animals.
Yeah.
I like it.
I like it.
Wait. Let's think of the cutest animal we could test on.
Baby panda.
I would say panda. Baby they're panda. Dying out anyway. Yes. Right? So that could, if they're...
We could be like, this is the last panda.
Ooh, yes.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yes.
This was last tested on the last panda. Ooh,
river otters in love.
Oh, my God. There's like two otters, and we just take them both out. I like it. Okay. Otters in love.
Who's someone that's still alive and beloved, like a Betty White or a Julie Andrews?
Oh, my
blood?
God.
Maybe their blood. Yes. We took their blood.
Betty White's blood.
Ooh, their medication.
Their medication.
Yes. I like it. The medication. Betty White's medication is used on the last baby panda. Like, what if we put it all... And the baby panda is locked in a car. The window is not rolled down.
There we go.
Right? So there's layers to it.
You know what we can do? We can take a picture of Betty White force-feeding the medication into the panda and then put that on the bottle.
And it says, if you don't look good, that's on you.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah.
I think that's Ivanka Trump.
Are you serious?
Yes. Putting like 13 Splendas in her coffee.
Here we go.
Dude, what are we going to do? We talked about this.
I know, we rehearsed it so many times.
Okay.
Okay, here we go.
Wait. She's like really pretty. Do you notice that? Like,
don't fall for it.
I know, but
we talked about this. We talked about this, okay?
Okay.
Remember what we'd say? We'd go out there, we'd say, America fucking
hates you.
And you should hate yourself.
Yes.
Okay? You should spend the rest of your life in Mar-a-Lago.
Yeah.
You can have Mar-a-Lago, the rest of America belongs to us, right?
And I've never said the C word, but I might this one time.
Yeah.
Yes.
This is the time that we earn
this
it.
Is the
I
time.
Still can't say it. I can never say it.
No.
May I never say it?
No.
Unless I was English, and then it's like fine.
Right.
I don't fully understand.
I know.
But since I'm American, I can't say it.
You can't say it.
Yes, but you can say it.
Okay.
And you should say it.
Okay,
excuse
here we go.
Excuse me, do you guys work here?
Yes, of course.
Yes, hi.
Hi.
Your creamer has like curdled a little bit. And
oh,
I just
no,
don't
we're
know.
So sorry.
We're so sorry.
If it's because
sorry.
The sun is coming through the window.
Yeah, oh, that must be exactly how milk curdles, is the sun comes
the
through
sun,
a window.
Yeah,
thank you
that's
for
a
teaching
totally
us that.
Normal thing everyone
know
knows.
That.
Do you think I could have a new coffee?
Oh, of course.
Of course.
Oh, my
course.
Gosh, you guys, thank
and
you
I'm
so much.
I'm so sorry, but you're Ivanka Trump, right?
Guilty.
Oh my God.
We're
what's the opposite of we're big fans?
I heard we're big fans, and I just want to say, of course you are. Most people don't have the guts to come up to me because of, well, and I just want to say, you're so brave to be on the clock and yet still talking to me in this service-related interaction. The coffee.
We're blowing it, man. Go. Okay.
God damn it, her skin is so smooth.
I know.
Okay. Here you go.
Non-curdled milk.
Okay.
I have seen your tops on clearance at Marshall's, and I do not buy them.
Oh my God, I know, because you pay full price. Thank you. I really appreciate that.
I saw that Nordstrom doesn't carry your clothing line anymore.
Yeah, I know. They sold out, and they just said they can't handle the rush.
She's fake newsing us right now.
She is. Mm. She's literally gaslighting us in front of our face. I think it's reprehensible that you employ children.
Okay, what?
I think it's reprehensible that children make your clothing for your fashion brand.
Okay, what? Come again? I can't hear you over the counter. What?
She called you a cunt.
No, you can't say that word!
Hey, can I talk to you kids? Kids, come down here. I want to show you two something that I received. Two subpoenas.
What?
Two subpoenas were sent to this house. When I grew up and you got a subpoena, you marched your ass down to the Capitol. Okay? Your generation in this hoity-toity, I don't respond to subpoenas. Do you know what your grandfather would have done?
Oh, here we go.
I don't know. Like, been old and cranky?
Okay. Old. If he had received a subpoena, he would have, as fast as he possibly could, have reported immediately.
Dad, subpoenas don't mean anything.
So, okay, see, this is where I disagree. If you get a subpoena, you reply to that subpoena, especially if it's from the government, okay?
Yeah, but, like, how do you know it's from the government?
It says it on the subpoena!
Yeah, but, like, what kind of subpoena is it? Is it, like, a real subpoena? Is it, like, we're just going to subpoena a bunch of people to show that we're doing our job? Like, how are we supposed to know what kind of subpoena
it is? There's
no
difference! It's a real subpoena from the government. Open them. Open your subpoenas.
I feel like once I open it, that means
open your subpoenas or no baseball or ice cream. Open your goddamn subpoenas.
I don't interact with paper. I'm not entirely sure what to do with this.
Okay, all right. Well, you know what? Just wipe open the page, all right? Put your fingernail on the top and then do a wiping
like
motion
this.
Across. There you go.
Ah, bleeding!
Good.
What is this?
What is blood?
Why did this paper cut me? It's like a paper cut.
Just imagine it's an analog
Dad,
iPad, okay?
This makes no sense. It's a bunch of boring jargon. Maybe if they got a bunch of actors to perform it, I would pay attention.
Yeah, like tour it across the country and make me like present it in a format that I'll understand.
Yeah, bring in dance or some shit, some rap. Then I'll report.
Yeah, make a rap song out of it and then make 13 different versions of it.
Okay. If that's what it'll take, I'll start writing a rap song for you kids. You want your dad to rap? You want some dad rap?
Yeah. No.
Let's see.
All right, that's it for today's show. Trumpcast was produced by Melissa Kaplan tonight. And every Trumpcast is produced by Melissa. She really, she really knocks herself out for us, and we appreciate it. Thank you very much to the Trumpcast colluders. They're available to riff on your life for a small fee. And thanks to the comedian par excellence, Aparna Nancherla. And Vicky Ward, thank you so much for being here. And thanks everyone for listening and being here for Trumpcast.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper? A woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver. I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.